After saying he was only going to play third base, Rafael Devers is now walking it back. Let's talk about it. Yes, welcome into another episode of First Pitch, your daily source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. My name is Troy Brock. I'll be your host today. You can find me on Twitter at Troy B Baseball. He is Lindsey Crosby. You can find him on the Twitter machine at Crosby Baseball. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, turn on the notification icon so you can be notified when more episodes just like this go live. If you're listening on audio, leave us a 5-star rating, leave us a review. It helps us out tremendously. And send your friends to that website down at the bottom of the screen if you're watching on YouTube, www.firstpitchpodcast.com, so they can get their source of news, notes, and updates. And we've got a packed show.
The reason I'm laughing about that is because he asked me what the website was and didn't see it on the bottom of the screen. And I was like, oh, you mean the website that's right there? That's right below your face right now. That one. Is that the one you want me to do? So really, the message for Friday's show.
At the end of the day, if you don't like it, play better.
It's going to be a fun show today. We're heading into the weekend. We're going to have some fun. But we got to talk about Rafi Devers. We got to talk about Giancarlo Stanton probably just not existing anymore. We got to talk about
back.
Yeah. Garrett Cole and the surgery he had. And of course, Lindsey's Atlanta Braves to round out our preseason preview of all the teams. But we're going to start with Rafael Devers. And, you know, a few weeks back, we talked about at the beginning of spring training, he came into camp saying he was a third baseman, essentially kind of the same thing as Marcus Stroman with the Yankees. He's a starter. He's not pitching out of the bullpen. For Rafi Devers, he was a third baseman. And reporters were asking him in a press conference if he would be willing to move to shortstop or DH or first base or whatever the case may be. And he told reporters, no, he's a third baseman. He plays third base. Yesterday, Rafi Devers spoke with reporters, and he is now open on being the Red Sox designated hitter after being adamant that third base was his position earlier in the spring, quoted via Ian M. Brown. And he said, I'm good to do whatever they want me to do. So in my opinion, you know, I think that the Red Sox brass, the front office, the manager, you know, Alex Cora or Rafi Devers' agent came out and was like, dude, this isn't a good look. You need to walk that back. How do you see this, Lindsey?
Yeah, there was some of the reporting in one of the articles I read. It was a conversation with Alex Cora and Craig Breslow from the front office a few weeks ago. And Rafi's like, you know, I just want to win. He did say he wasn't going to share what they talked about, right? These are private conversations. But he told them his point of view, how he sees things, and they know that. But he did say he'd be ready for opening day in Texas in 2 weeks, and that he just wants to win. I think this was something. This was inevitable, right? Like, he's under contract. He needs to be. That was awkward. That was a lot of news that they probably did not want about their team in spring, and he did say in some of the quotes, I've matured a lot during this and I'm ready to be forward. I'm ready to move forward. For me, it's been kind of sad that I've been put out there as somebody bad for the organization or not about this organization. And I think it was, so I think there was a conversation. What I would have done in that situation, I guess, if I was in the front office, is I'd have gone to him and said, hey, I'm sorry that this whole thing became public before we all made a decision and kind of got around this. I'm sorry with how that happened. I'm sorry that you're catching flack. Here's why we want to do that. Here's the information that shows why we want to do that. And if they can show him, like, hey, if it helps the team win, like, here's how much better we project, how many wins, runs, whatever, with this defensive alignment, I think that's probably the kind of thing that would have a lot of effect there. So, also, he's here for 8 more years. He's got 8 more years on a $313 million contract. So at a certain point, you're going to play what we tell you to play because we're paying you a lot of money to play whatever we tell you to play. I mean,
yeah.
You know, no. Everybody probably gave a little bit here, but it's resolved, need to be resolved. We're good. I think.
Yeah, you're spot on. I mean, I know I was kind of giving it to him here in the intro to that segment, but he when we talked about it a few weeks ago, I think both of us made it very clear that it was just handled poorly all around from the beginning of signing Alex Bregman by the Red Sox until that specific instance with the press conference a few weeks ago. And then now it was just handled poorly all around, from the front office, the team, to, you know, Rafi Devers at the press conference, the Alex Cora, how he handled it. It is just, and now it looks like they are starting to handle things a little bit better. And that's good moving forward. They need that team cohesion. They need a lot of things to go right, especially, you know, they need the team chemistry to be a good thing. They need guys to stay healthy, and so far, you know, they're not doing that, and so it
Lucas Giolito's not gonna be ready for opening day. Yeah, he's gonna be on the IL for opening day.
They're already starting to see people get hurt, and it's just the Red Sox are gonna have a rough season this year if they can't figure things out after bringing in Alex Bregman.
I will say, my final thought on this for Rafi, at the end of the day, it's kind of his own fault, right? Because he's been so bad defensively. I remember great American poet had some words about this.
At the end of the day, if you don't like it, play better.
Current teammate Vaughn Grissom had that quote after he lost the shortstop job in Atlanta to Orlando Arcia and was sent down to Triple A Gwinnett. End of the day, Rafi, if you don't like it, play better. If you were a better defender at third base, they would never have signed Bregman to play third in the first place.
Exactly. And just a reminder that, again, Vaughn Grissom lost the starting shortstop job to Orlando Arcia. But that's enough about the Red Sox and Vaughn Grissom. But we'll move on to the Yankees now. And Giancarlo Stanton not only has elbow issues in both of his elbows, but according to John Heyman yesterday, he is also dealing with a chronic calf issue, and an optimistic return date would be Memorial Day. So
what, of 2026?
Right.
You,
yeah.
I'm sorry. You made that joke in a text to me and I stole it on the show, and I apologize. That was not.
No. That's okay. It's okay. Yeah. It's not looking good for Giancarlo Stanton. It's not looking good for the Yankees. They're already dealing with a bunch of injuries. It's like I joked a couple weeks ago, the Yankees and the Mets are turning into the Braves and Dodgers from last year. It's but with the injuries that they're having, and missing out on Giancarlo Stanton for potentially the entirety of the season, because at this point, I personally don't see him playing much, if at all, in 2025. And so it's the lineup is taking a big hit. They're losing out on a lot of power. And it seems like, you know, with what we talked about a couple of days ago, with how they're not willing to go out and make a move or make a trade, or at least not willing to spend as much as needed to make a trade to replace Gerrit Cole in the rotation, they're not going to do the same thing for the lineup either. And so now it's Aaron Judge and the boys in the lineup. And so their offense is going to be hurt pretty bad because of this. Aaron Judge isn't going to have any protection. And we've already seen that their rotation has taken a big hit. But where do you stand on this Giancarlo Stanton walking hospital situation?
I mean, shout out to the dude for still getting paid without having to play, right? It's the Anthony Rendon plan. He's going to be like, he's a little different from some of the classic what if guys, but had he stayed fully healthy, he's going to be a really interesting what if, because even with the injuries last year, he had like the fastest bat speed in all of baseball, right? And thinking about what he could have done from a power perspective had he been healthy. But I mean, this is at this point, get fully healthy. There's a path if they need to sign a JD Martinez or somebody to DH if they have the roster spot with Stanton going on the IL. I know that they had insurance on Cole's contract. I'm wondering if they have insurance on Stanton's contract to maybe help with some of that. But it sucks, right? That's not good. But at the same time, it's not like he's been playoff Giancarlo Stanton in the regular season. And if he can if he can be a little bit better, like if you can give him most of the season off so that he's healthy in the postseason, that's potentially more impactful, because we still think they'll get there. Even though they're losing Gerrit Cole, they probably will still get there. They may not win the division, they may still get there, but it's just a matter of getting back for the postseason if you have to. You can find a DH, but it sucks. I hate it for Giancarlo Stanton. Honestly, I do.
Yeah, it's been a rough stretch of time throughout his tenure with the Yankees. I mean, he's dealt with injuries seemingly every year except last year. And even last year, he dealt with some. He just didn't deal with as many as he has throughout the rest of his tenure with the team. And it does suck for Stanton. It sucks for the Yankees. And that he'd probably reach 600 home runs or more if he was healthy throughout his career. Like
we talk about him as one of the top 10, 15 sluggers in baseball history had he been fully healthy. And I mean, it's the same kind of story as Ken Griffey Jr., right? Like Ken Griffey Jr., his injuries were more, I think, significant. His drop off was kind of bigger, but same story. Like we just talked about him as one of the greatest hitters in baseball history had he been fully healthy. And he's a what if? And it's kind of the same thing here. I still think Griffey's better than Stanton. I'm not conflating the two, but
for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Stanton's going to be in that boat, I think, going forward. He's not a Hall of Famer. Like I think that's pretty clear. Griffey was, Stanton's not, but he's going to be in that conversation of what if he would have been had he been fully healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll never know what could have been, and we may never know what could be.
There's some version of Earth out there where Giancarlo Stanton has like 720 home runs, and he's pushing for the all-time record that's held by Hank Aaron because Barry Bonds didn't use steroids, and it's just probably a better utopia overall versus this version we're on.
Right. Oh yeah, for sure. We'll need to get with the MCU and they can take us to that universe. But yeah, we'll Gerrit Cole, the Yankees. He had his Tommy John surgery yesterday. And funnily enough, the tweet that I sent you has now since been deleted. So that's probably a good thing. But he did have the internal brace with the complete UCL reconstruction. And the tweet that I sent you, the person that tweeted it, Brian Hotch with a baseball in his name, he said that would shorten the timeline for his injury. I'm not sure. But yeah, I think that
I'm willing to bet that's why it's been deleted. Yeah. So backstory here. When Spencer Strider had his surgery, maybe it was a different Braves prospect or something. Anyway, back when I was at Sports Illustrated, I wrote about the internal brace process. And I got an email from the company that created the internal brace process because I described it wrong in the article. I got an email from them asking me, one, to use the proper branding of internal brace, and then explaining the things that I got wrong and inviting me to come to their facility in Florida and tour it. Now, I did not do that, but the internal brace, like hearing that tweet that there was a complete UCL reconstruction with an internal brace, Gerrit Cole would not be able to come back early from that. So the UCL reconstruction is you have completely torn your UCL and we are putting in a new ulnar collateral ligament. It's in the middle of the elbow down here, you know, right? And that is the traditional Tommy John surgery, the 15 to 18 month recovery process. The internal brace has a specific functionality if it's not a fully torn UCL, right? And in essence, what it is, and if you're on video, yay, and if you're not, I apologize, is they drill into both parts of your arm around the elbow, and they stick in this like collagen-coated tape-like suture. And in essence, they put in, it's just like a support brace. I mean, the name is very descriptive. They put in this permanent suture in your arm that's anchored into both parts of your bone that provides stability to the joint so that, one, your UCL kind of like it works as a scaffold. So like your UCL, your partially torn UCL or your unstable UCL can heal. But then going forward, the internal brace is still there and can provide additional support. It can take extra torque that goes through the elbow versus it all having to go on the UCL. Now, if you have a fully torn UCL, the internal brace does not help you come back sooner. You still have to do the 15 to 18 months. But if you have a partially torn UCL, you can come back earlier because the internal brace, in essence, functions as a second UCL, right? It takes the forces and it gives you the scaffold to help it heal. So if Cole did in fact have a fully torn UCL, which the way that they were iffy on the quotes, I'm assuming he probably didn't, right? Because if they're talking about, oh, we're going to get a second opinion, if it's fully torn, you're having surgery. Come on. So if he had a partially torn UCL with the internal brace, he could come back sooner. But when I heard that tweet and I saw that he had a full UCL reconstruction, likely, we don't know if it's for a fact, likely it's a fully torn UCL and he's done. Like, he's not coming back in 9 to 12 months. He's coming back in 15 to 18. And it's probably the end of 2026 is your goal to get him some time, with the goal of him being back in the rotation on a regular basis in 27. So sucks for the Yankees. Yeah, internal brace can, like Spencer Strider of the Braves, he did not have a tear in his UCL. His UCL was unstable because of some bone spurs that were kind of in the way. So the internal brace was something that helped take the forces in his elbow while the UCL healed after they removed the bone spurs. That's a situation where the brace helps you come back quicker. Garrett Cole's is not. Assuming that it is fully torn, Garrett Cole's is not.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. So yeah, like we texted about that yesterday. I didn't understand it, so I'm glad you explained it on the pod, because yeah. I'm sure I'm not the only one that does not understand all of that. But it does suck for the Yankees. They're regardless, they're more than likely missing out on Garrett Cole for the entirety of this year and some of next year. And so that's got the Yankees in a rough spot. You know, we've talked about it. Their rotation is Max Fried and the boys now, especially with Luis Hill out of commission for some time. So
yeah,
it's not a good spot, but.
Oh, I found it. The company's called Arthrex.
Arthrex. Yeah,
down in Naples, Florida. They sent me an email with an animation and all of this stuff about like the right way to describe and how it works and everything, because I got it wrong in the Spencer Strider article. So there you go.
That's crazy. Yeah. I mean,
and again, awesome. They invited me to come to Naples and like tour the headquarters and talk to all these doctors and stuff. And I was like, that's super cool. I'm just not in Naples. So.
Right. Exactly.
If I ever go down there, I'm totally going to take her up on it.
Just print out the email and take it to him. Be like, look, this is for me. Take me
this
on
lady
tour.
3 years ago invited me to do this, or 2 years ago or whatever. Yeah.
I am here now. But speaking of here now, the Atlanta Braves are here now, and they lost the game yesterday. Don't know if anybody saw it or not, but they lost the game to the Philadelphia Phillies. Just want to point that out
real quick. Spring trading, who cares? The results of games don't matter in spring. I didn't know half the dudes in the game by the sixth inning. It doesn't matter. Listen here. You're going to make me feel bad. I don't care. But yeah, let's talk about the Braves.
Yeah, the Braves. They obviously were talking about them on Friday. We have them right up there. We talked about it yesterday, right neck and neck with the Phillies. I personally think that the Braves are going to win the division, and a lot of it stems on they really have no weakness throughout their roster. This roster as a whole, when it's healthy, is right up there with the Dodgers for the best roster in baseball, in my opinion. And it starts with the lineup right now with Acuna and Sean Murphy injured. Both of them will be back at some point this year, but right now the lineup is Jurickson Profar, Austin Riley, Matt Olson, Marcell Ozuna, Michael Harris II, Ozzie Albies, Drake Baldwin. They have Fangraphs has filling in for Sean Murphy, then Orlando Arcia at short, Jared Kelenic in right field. I mean, and then on the bench, Chadwick Tromp, Nick Allen, Brian De La Cruz in a platoon with Jared Kelenic, and then Eli White. So, I mean, you know this lineup pretty well, Lindsay. You obviously are the Braves guy. So what do you love about this lineup? What do you hate about it? Where does it stand in the annals of Braves history?
Yeah, bringing in Jurickson Profar, to me, fixed some of the issues. Like, left field was kind of a black hole last year. Kelenic was in there. He struggled a bit. He also had to move to center field because of injuries. You went through, you tried Eddie Rosario, you tried Ramon Laureano. Profar is a high on base guy. They're very high on the changes that he made to have that breakout last year and how they're sustainable. So I thought like that was really good. You've got a lot of power, right? I mean, Riley, Olson, Ozuna are three of the better power hitters in baseball. When he's back, Ronald Acuna Jr. hits for a bunch of power. There's like a lot of, Ozzie Albies is one of the best power hitters of the second baseman. I think Michael Harris could be a 2020 or a 25-25 guy. Like, there's a lot to like here. I mean, weaknesses, you do have a situation. You got some guys coming back from injury. You have Ronald coming back from injury. Sean Murphy's been, this is now his second major injury in like less than one calendar year. But at least like one for Acuna, he could be back already, but they're taking it slow. And he's looked really good in spring, in the work on the field, batting practice, that kind of stuff. And then for Murphy, Drake Baldwin's your top prospect in the organization. He's a power hitting lefty catcher. This will be his MLB debut. So a little nerve wracking there, but you like that. Weaknesses on this team, I kind of feel like, is a lack of team speed. This is not a very fast team. You've got some guys. Ronald has decent speed. Obviously, Michael Harris is fast. That's part of the reason Eli White's so valuable on the bench, because he is one of the fastest player on the team. But like Ozzie Albies has trended down a little bit. Orlando Arcia is slower than some catchers. Like, I'm not even joking. Matt Olson, Marcelo Zuna, Austin Riley, they're all smart base runners, but they're not very fast base runners. So you do have a lack of team speed here. Other than that, I mean, this is, to your point, it's one of the best lineups in baseball. You've got plenty of lefties and switch hitters and things like that. So you can stack up, and almost everybody plays every day. The one platoon you have is a corner outfield spot right now with Kelnick and Brian De La Cruz. And once Ronald's back, all nine of your position, well, I guess everything except for catcher, is going to play every day. And even catcher, they want to play Sean Murphy 4 out of every 5 days. They want to give him the JT Realmuto treatment. So not a lot to not like. You're just banking on a lot of these guys to rebound from a rough 2024. And I think this team is closer to the 2023 version of the Braves than the 2024 version of the Braves, both in health and in power production.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you. I do have a follow-up question there on Ronald Acuna for you. With the injuries that he's faced of late, and, you know, he's coming off a knee surgery, torn ACL, do you think he kind of pulls a Trey Turner where he, moving forward throughout his career, he does not run as much and chooses his spots a little bit more?
He did say he wanted to run a little bit less and do that, right? Be a little smarter on when he ran. I don't think it's going to be as extreme as Trey Turner, like, you know, 10 stolen base attempts in a season, but he is going to run a little bit less. And I do think that if Michael Harris can be fully healthy, he can pick up some of that lead. But I think in a dream scenario, in a dream world, whoever your next shortstop is somebody who can run a lot and can give you some stolen bases. Also, Marcelo Zuna is in the final year of his deal. He is 34 years old. He'll be 35 when he becomes a free agent. If they don't bring him back, you'll have the ability, especially if Jared Kelnick figures it out when he's an everyday starter to start the year, you'll have the ability to rotate guys like Ronald Acuna Jr. through the DH spot so that he can get a little bit of a rest from having to run defensively. And maybe it's the same amount of effort that he's giving, but he can do more on the base pass because he's not having to play outfield every single day. I don't know how much you'll take him out of right field, but it's an option because Atlanta's just had a DH stuck in that spot every day for the last couple seasons, and they don't really have the ability. They get a lot of production. Ozuna was the best hitter last year on the team, but they don't have the ability to rotate a guy through and give him a half day off as the DH like a lot of other teams do. So Ronald is going to run less. He said that. We'll see if that's true when the games actually start. But he said that at least he's going to be a little smarter about that going forward.
Yeah, especially this year. I expect it whenever he does come back this year, but we'll have to see in the following years. But one thing you can't ever take away from the Atlanta Braves is the amount of depth that they have, except maybe in the catching position because of the injury to Sean Murphy right now. But they do still have a couple of NRIs and Kurt Casale and Sandy Leon, Adam Zembrowski at catcher. Garrett Cooper, NRI for first base right now. Second baseman Christian Kyros on the 40-man. And then you've got Eddie Alvarez and Jose Devers. Third base, Luke Williams. You know, we've seen him up and down over the past few years with the Braves.
He's, man. He's played everywhere but catcher, I think. He's even pitched, like, everywhere.
Right. Nacho Alvarez, we may see him a little bit more this year probably not at short.
Second or third, yeah.
And then in the outfield, in AAA, Carlos Rodriguez on the 40-man, Jake Marisnik, Connor Capel on NRIs. The depth, how do you feel about the offensive depth of the Braves? I mean, it's good, in my opinion.
Yeah, they learned last year with all those injuries, right? They had to bring in Whit Merrifield midseason. They had to bring in Gio Urshela down the stretch to play. And both those guys were starting every day, right? They brought in Ramon Laureano. He was starting every day by the end of the year. I feel like they've done a good job of getting more options where they can plug in a guy who's on the roster. Now, obviously, a lot of these guys are a downgrade from the starter. You're not going to replace Austin Riley midseason or things like that. But Atlanta's acknowledged that, like, hey, it's really hard to get guys to sign here in free agency for a bench role because we don't rotate our starters like everybody else does. We don't give guys an opportunity. But I do feel like, yeah, they have options. If anybody misses time, especially if it's like a 10-day IL thing, if a 10-day IL thing, I feel like, yeah, you got somebody you can plug right into that spot and you keep moving. Ozzie Albies has missed a bunch of time in the past, although this isn't an odd number year, and he seems to do much better in odd number years. So, yeah, like I feel good about the ability to fill in for anybody. The issue is if you have another injury, right? Like Nacho Alvarez is going to be your second and third base guy. But if you lose somebody else, now you're playing a 35-year-old Eddie Alvarez, or now you're playing, you know, Christian Kyra is a Rule 5 pick. He might have to get sent back if he doesn't make the team, which he's probably not going to make the team. You've got Nick Allen, though, at the major league level. So you've got a guy. Not many teams go two or three deep on these backups. I'm not too worried about that. But it is something that I think about just given what happened last year. And you had to go out and you were starting three guys who had been DFA'd by other teams by the end of the season.
Yeah. And from the offensive side of the ball to the pitching side of the ball, another unit where the Braves are just loaded with depth is the starting rotation. Of course, Spencer Strider is on the IL. He is expected back early in the season. Right now, Chris Sale, Reynaldo Lopez, Spencer Schwellenbach, Grant Holmes, and Ian Anderson is the projected starting rotation for opening day. I mean, you can't really go wrong with Chris Sale coming off a National League Cy Young and the National League Triple Crown. Reynaldo Lopez was impressive in his 2024. You know, he was coming off of being a reliever to transitioning to a starter. He had a fantastic season. Spencer Schwellenbach had a breakout year last year. Grant Holmes was fantastic for the Braves down the stretch. And of course, you know, Ian Anderson didn't pitch much last year, if at all. He did not pitch at all last year.
It was in the minors. Yeah, it was all the minors.
Yeah. And, but he's back at the major league level now, and, he's done okay in spring training so far. So, you know, how do you feel about the rotation and the depth of this rotation?
If Ian Anderson's your five, I feel okay. Right. It's better than Bryce Elder being your five. this is a roster that, or sorry, a rotation that feels like, especially when Strider's back, this could be one of the deepest in baseball, right? It's not Seattle level. I would argue when Strider's back, it matches up really well with Philly for one of the best rotations in all of baseball. They don't quite have the track record of depth of a workload that Philly has, right? With Nolan, and Wheeler, but I like this rotation a lot. And then some of your depth options, your AJ Smith, Shauver, guys like that. I'm really high on Grant Holmes converting to the rotation. We saw him do it with Lopez last year. Holmes has looked really good in spring. A lot of the metrics behind Holmes have looked really good, to the point where I tried to get Grant Holmes in my dynasty auction the other day and give him a long-term deal because he's been a great reliever. I feel like he could be a great starter too. And then Ian Anderson's kind of the question mark here. Again, as your five, he was amazing in the 21 postseason. I was at game three of the World Series when he had a no-hitter through five. If you can get 90% of that guy that he was, that's a pretty decently good fifth starter. Like, they have him projected on FanGraphs for a 4.26 ERA in 100 innings. It's like, as a fifth starter, you'd take that. That's low fours as a fifth starter. Yeah. And everybody else under a three, right? And then adding Strider obviously is a huge deal. I'm super happy with this rotation. And then the bullpen too. I know you haven't previewed that yet, but you're bringing back your big four on Raisel Iglesias as your closer, one of the best in baseball last year. Pierce Johnson, Aaron Bummer, Dylan Lee. They have indicated, or at least I reason to believe, They're going to start Daisybell Hernandez in the minors and Angel Perdomo on an IL stint to rehab when the season starts. So they could have four in our eyes in their bullpen, right? They could have Hector Neris. They could have Buck Farmer. They could have Jake Diekman. And then the last one, trying to figure out who that last one would be is the thing. It's probably Inyo De Los Santos. But like they could have four in our eyes in the pen on opening day, but they're all dudes who have been successful at the major league level and have good stuff. And so, yeah, it's there's a lot to like about this pitching staff. It's one of the deeper ones I think Atlanta's had and makes me feel good about the ability to have at least three postseason caliber starters available when you get to October. Because every year it feels like you've had questions about who's going to start game three. And it was like game three against Philly. Who's going to start game three? It was Bryce Elder one year. It was AJ Smith-Shawver like one time. Who's going to start game three? I feel good that between Sale, Strider, Lopez, Schwellenbach, and Holmes, because I think Holmes will be that caliber. He'll be a number three. You've got five guys. You should be able to get three to October.
Yeah, 100% agree. I'm right there with you, especially when Spencer Strider comes back, that I do think this rotation rivals the Philadelphia Phillies. It's right up there with the Philadelphia Phillies and Seattle Mariners. And then the bullpen also, it's one of the best bullpens in the sport, one of the deepest bullpens in the sport. This one rivals the Los Angeles Dodgers as far as depth and ability, especially with those NRI guys, which, by the way, three of them are former Philadelphia Phillies. Hector Neris, Jake Diekman, and Inyo De Los Santos.
Can't beat him, join him.
There it is. But yeah, this is one of the best teams in baseball. I think that I said it at the beginning of this preview of this team that I think they're going to win the division. I think that this team can win the World Series this year as long as they stay healthy and don't face the same amount of injuries that they did last year. I really think this team has a very good opportunity to win the World Series this year. Last year they won 89 and 73 games, came in second in the division. 95 games, Lindsay, over or under? 95 wins, I'm sorry, over or under?
Ooh, this is tough for me. This is tough for me. I'm going to go with under, but barely. I think it's like 93.
Wow. Okay. You're a little more conservative on the Braves than I am. I would rather
under promise and over deliver there, buddy.
Hey, no, I 100% agree with you. And I think that the Braves are going to win 102 games. Hopefully I over promise that they under deliver on that projection. But it is going to be a good year in Atlanta. The NL East is stacked. It's unquestionably the best division in baseball. I might be a little biased, but I do honestly believe that the National League East is the best division in baseball, top to bottom. And it's going to be a fantastic race in the National League East. But that does it for our team previews. You know, we've done the past 6 weeks. We've gone through every division, every team, and here we are standing on the other side. Who wins the World Series at the end of the year?
I was about to say, we have to make all those picks and stuff next week. Let me do this. Of the 30 teams we've previewed, who do you think does better than we projected? Kind of put you on the spot here. I didn't tell you we were doing this. Who do you think does better than we projected them to do?
This is rough because I don't remember a lot of teams that we projected them to do.
I'm going to say there's a chance that Milwaukee does. Simply because they seem to always do it, and nobody understands how. They have the catcher devil magic. It somehow spreads to the entire roster. They somehow every single year just seem to outperform the expectations given on them. So I'm going to say the Brewers. I still don't know if they win the division, but it is possible maybe that they find a way to slip into the playoff picture at the expense of somebody in the West. Or somebody in the East. Like maybe they upset the Mets to get in the third and final playoff spot. And your playoff team, your wild card teams are the loser of the East, the Brewers, and the Diamondbacks.
Yeah. No, that's a good one. I think I'm going to say the Red Sox Because, you know, especially me, I've been very hard on the Red Sox and I've been very low on the Red Sox leading into this season. So
I'm a hater, man. I don't think you want to ask me that. I am a hater, so I'm going to just leave it at that.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm going to say the Red Sox because I know we both said that it's going to take a lot to go right, but it could go right. It could go right. And, you know, Lucas Giolito could be back sooner than we think. And their rotation could be better than I expect it to be. And, you know, Trevor Story could spend a whole year in the lineup. He might not get hurt. I mean, it's unlikely, but he might not get hurt. So I'm going to say the Red Sox.
The thing that I like about the Red Sox, I think, is they're positioned very, very well to deal with injury because they've got these three top prospects, Roman Anthony for the outfield, Marcelo Meyer at short if Story does get hurt. And that could be a scenario where you move Sedane Rafaela to short instead of center field and you put Roman Anthony on the outfield. Like, you have options there. And then Christian Campbell at second base. You know, if Bregman's playing third, you know, you can stick him at second base or you can put Bregman at second. Like, they're so well prepared to get past an injury offensively. And not just get past it, but with a top prospect, a very, very talented player. And so I think that's the big advantage that the Red Sox have over anybody else in the division is an offensive injury. They can be fine. And there's upside in the rotation. Walker Buehler struggled last year. He looked really good in the postseason. Maybe he figured it back out. You know, Quinn Priester's a guy that Pittsburgh moved on from. Maybe he can surge there. And then a lot of starters on the IL that can come back, like a Giolito, like a Brian Bello, Cutter Crawford, a lot of dudes they could stick back in there. So the depth would be there when everybody's off the IL. So yeah, there's a lot of things to like here.
Yeah, 100% agree. It's a solid team, and especially with the Yankees, the injuries they've dealt with, and really nothing to make up for those injuries. The American League East is a lot more open than we thought it was 6 weeks ago when we both put the Yankees on the Friday episode. But this has been First Pitch for your Friday, March the 14th. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, turn on that notification icon, send your friends to that website down at the bottom of the screen, firstpitchpodcast.com. It's there in case you've never noticed it, because I sure as hell haven't. But thank you for joining us today. We'll be back on Monday with another episode. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.